Hi, and welcome to the Talking to Grandma podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. For today's episode, I'm going to talk about how to heal generational language wounds. We will explore what generational language wounds are, where they come from, how they impact us and our children or students, and finally, how to heal and move forward. There's a lot to unpack in today's episode, so do what feels best for you as you engage. This could be going for a walk while you listen, pulling out a notebook for reflections, or making your favorite cup of tea. Whatever it is, and however you engage, thank you for being here today. If you've been a listener for a while, you may know that I didn't grow up speaking my heritage language, which is Spanish, even though it was the first language of my parents and the only language that my grandmother spoke. Now, I have two children that speak three languages. This was a hard-fought journey for our family. You see, just two generations earlier, my parents were physically beaten in school when they were heard speaking Spanish. As a result, I didn't grow up speaking Spanish and struggled for years to learn the language. In addition to conjugation and grammar, studying the Spanish language intersected with my identity, historical traumas, and relationship with my family. This was always ignored in my Spanish classes. When I had my firstborn, I knew that connection was critical to his bilingualism. He carried it in his bones, but for generations, families like his, other immigrant and indigenous communities were made to feel like outsiders, less than, and unsafe because of their heritage language and culture. It's no surprise then that despite our rich diversity, only 20% of Americans can converse in two or more languages compared to nearly 50% of the world. What we are doing with language learning in the U.S. is not working. What we are doing now is blind to at best and hostile to at worst the nearly 350 spoken languages in our country. We have an incredibly rich linguistic diversity, but yet that doesn't translate to a very bilingual country. And that has a lot to do with generational language wounds. Generational language wounds speak to this idea that languages aren't lost just by chance or by accident across the generations. Rather, there was some sort of trauma, discrimination, or deficit narrative that caused this language loss. And this really ties back to colonialism. Across the world, colonialism used language as a tool for conquest. On October 11, 1492, Columbus's ships landed on the island that he named San Salvador, and he recorded the following in his journal. "With God's will, I will take six of them with me for your majesties when I leave this place, so that they may learn Spanish." According to the historian Zenja de la Rosa, language was used by the Spanish to consolidate political power, to spread the Catholic faith, and to unify the empire. You see, the World Bank estimates that there are 560 languages spoken in Latin America, but some studies show that before Spaniard colonization, the continent was home to over 2,000. In the U.S., this can also be seen in our history with Native American boarding schools, English-only policies, and the general lack of bilingual programming for a student population that has the foundations for bilingualism. Over 30% of our students entering kindergarten and preschool speak some language other than English, their home language. While we may not be aware of the history that caused our generational language wounds, we can see the manifestation of these wounds through the shame we feel about not speaking or how we speak our heritage language, through the anxiety or pressure we feel around our language, through the feeling of not being enough, and even through the desire for perfection around our heritage language. Simply put, our relationship with our heritage language is not without context or complexity. And often, to heal our relationship with our heritage language, we need to work through this stuff. When I had my firstborn, I was trained in early childhood and education. I have my doctorate in education and knew a lot about child development. And I also knew the benefits of bilingualism. And I decided to raise my child bilingual. And I had no idea how difficult it would be. When he came home those first couple of days, I tried really hard to create a language-rich environment, which is, I know, as an early childhood educator, incredibly important for language development, even in those first days. It's really important to narrate everything that you're doing so that your child can start to hear language and process and mimic and be encouraged to make those sounds and words. And so inside my home, I was using language quite often and creating this language environment, narrating every little thing. Por ejemplo, ahora es tiempo de cambiar ese pañal. Vamos a levantarte y ponerte aquí y quitar los pantalones. Narrating even the process of changing the diaper. But when I put all of his clothes on and strapped him into his stroller and made it outside the house for our walk, I found myself nearly mute. I couldn't narrate in the same way. I couldn't speak to him in the same way in Spanish because I felt this wave of shame. I was worried every time I walked past somebody in my Brooklyn neighborhood that they would hear me speaking Spanish and judge me and think, what is she doing speaking that language to her kid? Either because they thought I should be speaking English or because they judged me because I had an accent while I was speaking Spanish, or maybe I made a mistake, or maybe I conjugated that verb wrong. And I realized in that moment that there's so much that I needed to unpack in order to pass on this language to my child, that I could stay silent and I could give in to this fear and pressure and desire for perfectionism and pass that oppression and wound onto my child, or I could lean into that and push past that and pass on my liberation to my child and really help them to understand that our language and our culture is about connection and not perfection. And whatever our relationship to our language and culture is our relationship. It doesn't have to look any particular way. It is unique and it is enough. And so I share this story with you all so that you know that you're not alone if you're feeling some of these same things and that there is a way through it. Even though we are aware of some of these generational language wounds, that there's a way through. And so I want to go through four steps that I've outlined that are by no means comprehensive, but are a beginning on how to begin to heal these generational language wounds. And the first step is to recognize that the language wound was caused by systemic oppression. This is really important because I think for so long when I was learning Spanish and trying to pass on the language to my son, I felt this incredible personal failure, right? Like that I wasn't learning it fast enough or that I couldn't get through this block. And placing myself within this larger context and understanding the history and understanding the systemic oppression helped me to understand that I was up against a lot and that any movement that I made forward was a positive movement and was a movement of resistance. And that brings me to my second point, which is to situate yourself and others within that context, to know that others are navigating a context in the U.S. that for many years has tried to strip immigrant and indigenous communities of their language and culture. And when we understand that, we can understand that our language learning and our language speaking is an act of resistance, no matter what stage it's at or how it comes across, that anything that we have is an act of resistance and it's better than nothing. And I remember thinking this specifically with my firstborn and having a lot of doubts and thinking, you know, am I going to be able to pass on enough to him because it's not my first language and I'm not totally fluent. It's not as strong as my English. And I remember reevaluating my relationship with Spanish growing up. And I remember for a long time being upset with my parents that they didn't teach us Spanish and thinking, oh, I wish, you know, if they just would have spoken to us in Spanish, then we would have learned the language, which is a big assumption and not totally the case. But that's what I thought. And I never really thought about it from a place of enoughness and from this place of resistance. And I realized that while my parents, you know, didn't speak to us directly in Spanish, we were surrounded by a lot of Spanish. And I grew up kind of passively bilingual, understanding a lot of the language. And that what they did pass down was better than nothing because it helped me to learn the language at a faster rate when I did decide to jump into the language learning. And I also took that perspective with my child and realized that whatever I do pass on to my son is better than nothing, is something that is going to be a gift to him and an act of resistance in helping this language to stay alive across the generations. Which also brings me to my third point, which is to take a strength-based approach to language learning. For generations, our heritage languages and cultures were framed as a deficit, right? So, you know, when we went to school as young children, our parents were told by teachers not to speak to us in Spanish because that would confuse us, right? The Spanish was framed as a deficit. And so my parents experienced that when they went to school. It was such a deficit that they were punished when they were heard speaking the language. And so we may have internalized this narrative around our language and our culture being a barrier to success or being a barrier to a happy, safe life. And we have to reframe that and take a strength-based approach to our language learning and to ourselves and be gentle with ourselves and know that what we are doing is enough for our children and is a gift to them. And the final point here in terms of overcoming these generational language wounds is remembering that language is about connection and not perfection. And this is really, really important because a lot of times our society can be steeped in perfectionism, particularly in a school environment where you want to strive for that A and you want to strive to get all their answers right and you want to strive to meet all of these requirements and pass the test and X, Y, and Z. But when it comes to language, language is a tool for communication. Language is a tool for connection. And the best thing that we can do for ourselves and for our children is to base our language learning in a sense of connection. This will help to give us a sense of belonging, positive feelings about the language, and really motivate us to learn the language and to continue to use it. And it is a much more beneficial, efficient approach to language learning than other approaches that might be steeped in focusing so much on the perfectionism of things and getting every little aspect right of it that might cause us to shut down or to feel a sense of separation or disinterest in the language. And so really remember that our language is about connection, and we can do that in a lot of different ways. I think for me, grounding my language learning and connection was a lot of speaking to my children in Spanish and learning alongside them and helping them to feel connected to the language through positive experiences, through making friends that spoke predominantly in that language, by communicating to my grandmother, their great-grandmother in the language, by communicating to my mother in that language so that they have really positive experiences with the language and have a real world need and desire to use the language. So just to summarize, the four starting beginning steps around healing generational language wounds. The first is to recognize that the language wounds was caused by systemic oppression. The second is to situate yourself and others within that context, and then understand that your language learning is an act of resistance. The third is to take a strength-based approach to language learning. And the fourth is to remember that language is about connection and not perfection. I'd love to hear from you all. What do you think of this concept of generational language wounds? Have you experienced that? How has that shown up in your life? And have you taken any steps to begin to heal those generational language wounds within yourself, within your family, or within your community? Please let us know. Share your thoughts with us via email and our Instagram. Let us know what you thought of this episode and if you'd like to hear more like these. Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to share this podcast with a friend or colleague. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your ratings and reviews help us to keep the podcast lights on. We can't do this without your support. Every subscription, share, follow, download, and review makes a big difference and helps others find our show. Also, we love hearing from you. Tell us what you think of the podcast. Email us at hello@thelanguageproject.co. You can also slide into our DMs on Instagram at Talking to Grandma. Talking to Grandma is owned by the Language Preservation Project. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara, and I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. See you next episode.